This episode of The Orb is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek FM at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org. And if you want to join the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode, join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the Facebook search field. We look forward to seeing you there.
This is J.G. Hertzler, General Martok on Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome, Niners, to another episode of The Orb, our dedicated Deep Space Nine show. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me, as he always is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. Matthew, you look a little odd today because I'm looking at you in the mirror, but there are a few cracks in it.
I mean, sorry about that, Chris. It's weird that we're speaking through the mirror this way. I'm so glad that you got the magical mirror that I sent you for Christmas, which is fantastic. You know, this way we can podcast in a way that we'd never thought possible. We don't even need computers anymore. We just have this magical mirror that records it for us and everything. So it was like the ultimate gift for podcasting.
That's right. I think it's the latest product from Zoom, the platform that we use for meeting online and recording. And yeah, I mean, I walked into my studio and I saw it just lying there on the table. And then, you know, I took it to some people and we looked at it and we talked about it. And someone suggested that maybe you had left that there as a gift or an invitation, shall we say, to join you in a discussion about the Mirror Universe.
Well, that was my thought. I figured that you would pick up the heavy hint that I was giving you with the mirror, and I was not wrong, Chris. You have not lost your touch. It may have been an eyesight problem, but the brain is still fully functional.
That's right.
Oh, man. Hey, I just got to say, it's really great to be back on the Orb. You know, it's really roomy in here, by the way. I know most people think of the Orb box really small, but when you get shrunk down and in the Orb, it's kind of like Genie's bottle and I Dream of Genie. It's really comfy and cozy in here.
Okay. I thought you were going for a Christina Aguilera reference there.
No, because I know how much you like to sing
on the show.
I mean, no, Christina and I, we had a falling out. I'm not allowed to talk about her songs. I'm just kidding.
Oh, okay. That's that restraining order that was put against you.
I don't know how we got here. But Chris, I do remember.
Are you not allowed to sing her songs on the show anymore, you're not even allowed to talk about them.
Whatever, I'm a genie in a bottle, baby. I don't even remember the song. But you know what I do remember, Chris, is that we have some reviews that we need to talk about from iTunes we want to give some shout-outs to.
Yeah, let's do that up front. We usually do that at the end, but we have really been negligent in reading reviews because we've been recording so infrequently. So let's go ahead and mention three reviews before we get into our discussion of the Mirror Universe, because we want to say thank you to our fans, SJN MPLS, which I assume means Minneapolis, Minnesota. Maybe I'm wrong there.
I was thinking the same thing.
Yeah, but they wrote, new to podcast, but impressed. Gave us 5 stars and said, I've subscribed and I'm only up to episode 4, but I like this discussion so far. DS9 has always been the Trek series that I've liked the least, which they wrote in all capital letters, but I wanted to listen to this in part as I rewatch the series with an open mind and try to appreciate the show at a deeper level.
Which is great. You know, I'm so glad that you are giving us a try and you're giving Deep Space Nine another go, which is fantastic. And hopefully, as we've said before, we can talk you into thinking that this is the best Trek series there is. So,
in all capital letters.
Yes.
All right. So one more review. The best of the Trek FM podcasts, 5 stars. This is from J_Nick. Who wrote, I am slowly working through all of the Trek FM podcasts, and this is definitely my favorite. Matthew and Chris are great hosts, and they work so well together. The more I watch all the Star Trek series, the more I appreciate the genius behind DS9. Regardless of how well I think that I know each of the DS9 episodes, this podcast touches on new points and ideas that I never thought of. I enjoy each episode of The Orb and look forward to the upcoming podcasts. Keep up the great work, and please continue with the DS9 discussions. So, Matthew, on this one, they said they're working through all the Trek FM podcasts. I don't have an exact count, but I did a rough count a while back, and I believe there are more than 4,500 podcast episodes in our back catalog.
Well, that's going to be a lot of listening. On some of those episodes, I feel sorry for you. I'm so sorry that, you know, you have to listen to those. Most of them were ones that I was on in the early days. The audio was not quite as good as it is now.
Oh, the days of the snowball. Yeah.
Oh, that's right. The days of the snowball. That accursed thing that should be stricken from all podcasters' like ability to buy. Never buy a snowball. But yes, no, some amazing episodes back in the day. I remember going back and listening to every single Ready Room that had been done. So great stuff back there.
A lot of barrel rolls back then.
Barrel rolls and going on adventures with hobbits. And I mean, you never know what you're going to find.
That's true. All right. We have one more that we're going to read here. Great Discussions, 5 stars by Toreadoris, Toreadoris. And they wrote, I love listening to fellow Niners. I randomly walked by the TV when Emissary premiered here in Iceland as a teenager, and it sucked me into the entire world of Star Trek, for which I am eternally grateful. I love listening to both of your views. Being a Buddhist myself for the past 20 years, I really love hearing how others see DS9 with different perspectives. DS9 expresses the human experience genuinely and asks tough questions without always saying what is right or wrong. When I rewatch DS9, I feel like that was what taught me to think critically and to see things from many perspectives as a teenager.
I think that's the hallmark of any good show, you know, to make you think outside the box, you know, and make you appreciate other viewpoints, even if you still might not agree at the end. I think that's one of the things that Deep Space Nine does very well. I think that the show obviously has a core set of beliefs to it, but it allows others to influence those and allows characters to go on journeys that allow them to be influenced. And so I think that that is something this world sorely needs. It desperately needs. And so, you know, Deep Space Nine, again, as we've said before, I think becomes more and more relevant as the years go on. And something I think that I think it's what makes it the gold standard of Star Trek, because it allows people to be able to experience a different point of view in a non-threatening way. And so, goodness, let's just hope more of us can, maybe we should all start watching more Deep Space Nine.
I think Netflix would appreciate that.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I've got to say, I was watching the episode for today. I was watching through Shattered Mirror again, even though I've seen it hundreds of times, I feel like. And watching it on the Apple TV 4K, on my 4K TV. And I have to say that the stream did a pretty good job of upgrading the show as much as possible. Yeah. And it looked pretty good. And I'm thinking, man, if you just remastered this, it would be exquisite.
It would, it would. And I know what you mean, because I have 4K displays. They're 23-inch, so they're probably much smaller than what you're using. But in my studio, I have a 4K display on my computer and the Apple TV 4K. And I was thinking the same thing. I was thinking, you know, this DS9 streaming through Netflix on 4K, although it, of course, is not actually 4K, it does look a lot better than it does off the DVDs.
Yeah, which, you know, I don't have the, I don't have any of the Star Trek DVDs anymore. And part of that was because they were all on Netflix. I have the TNG Blu-rays because they put those out, and I have Enterprise on Blu-rays, but the rest I don't have. And then TOS I have on Blu-ray too. So it's like I have all of these in HD, and then I have the two lingering, and it's like, oh, man, I just want to complete the collection. So, and my wife and I have been slowly, and I mean the slowest rewatch ever, and it's her first time through Enterprise, but it's been fun because the show still looks great, even though we're watching it on, you know, the new 4K TV and everything. So, yeah, I wish that they would complete the sets. So,
maybe one of these days. All right. Well, thank you, everyone, for the reviews. We really appreciate it. And if you have a moment and you want to pop into the iTunes app on the desktop or the Apple Podcasts app on your iOS devices and leave us a star rating and a written review, we would really appreciate it. We do love hearing from you. And that was cool to get a review from Iceland this time. And also someone who has a Buddhist background.
Yeah, which is really, this is totally random, but recently, I've just been seeing commercials for this brand new vodka, but it's from Iceland, and they're doing a bunch. They're doing commercials because it's just here now in the States. So I'm gonna have to try that sometime and be like, "Yep, I got a listener from Iceland."
You're inspired.
That's right. There you go.
All right. Well, let's move on with our discussion of the Mirror Universe. You might be listening to these episodes of The Orb if you're listening to them later on in quick succession, and therefore our reviews up front will flow with everything that's going on. And now we'll talk about Shattered Mirror, which is the third part of the DS9 Mirror Universe arc. And Matthew, we were talking before the show on the other side of the orb. There are doors on the back of the orb as well, which people may not be aware of. We were talking about the way that this story creates some demarcation between the characters that we know from the Prime Universe and their mirror counterparts. And you started sharing some of your thoughts on that with me, but it's better if we get them here for everyone to listen to. So tell me about that.
Yeah, the thing that really stuck out to me is throughout the Mirror Universe series so far in Deep Space Nine, these characters have become a little bit more like the characters we know. And specifically, I think Smiley, you know, he's become a character who feels a lot like our Chief O'Brien. And yet in this episode, I think we get a true demarcation of just how different these characters are in that they would steal Sisko's son. They would kidnap Sisko's son and force him to work for them or else, basically. And not that they're going to hurt Jake, but they're going to keep him until they get what they want. And, you know, this is something that I think really shows the difference between the two universes, that, yes, these characters in the Mirror Universe are trying to do quote-unquote good, and yet still the way that they go about it is a way that we would find in the Prime Universe with our, you know, good characters, abhorrent. And so there's a real difference between these two different sides. You know, between good and evil, these characters still fall more on the side of kind of an evilish tint. You know, there's not as much good in them just yet. And that's to be expected because this is a different universe. And that's the whole point of the Mirror Universe anyway. And I thought that was actually a really nice way to start the episode with what happens, because it does give us a reminder. No, yes, these characters are becoming quote unquote better people, but they still have quite a long way to go. And I think that is what makes it interesting then in Deep Space Nine to continue to revisit the Mirror Universe to see how these characters may or may not have actually changed.
Yeah, when I think back to Smiley in the first two episodes, particularly the first one, he seemed very much like O'Brien, but an O'Brien who lacked confidence because he had been beaten down.
Right.
Here, he still feels very much like O'Brien to me, but obviously he is willing to take extreme measures to try to create a better life for the Terrans who have been oppressed by this regime. As you're talking about that, I was thinking about how even our own characters and Starfleet in the Prime universe, in the Prime timeline, behave later in the series in DS9. So the characters that we see in the Mirror Universe here, they have been pushed to a situation where they've been beaten down to the point where they feel that they have to fight back. And therefore, they do take some actions that we would normally not consider taking. Kidnapping Jake, for example. But is it that different than what starts to happen to the Federation late in the Dominion War, when the Federation is losing and they're pushed to the point where they have to take extreme measures for their very survival?
You know, I think that is a really interesting pull and something that I hadn't even thought of yet either, but I think you're right on. And that's the beauty of Deep Space Nine, is that in all aspects, it really is delving into the human condition. And what does it mean to be human? What does it mean to be in this utopia of the 24th century? And when push comes to shove, what will we do? And I think the answer is quite real, in the sense that we may find ourselves stooping to a level that we didn't think we would go to, as advanced and as enlightened, quote unquote, as we think we are. There is still a base instinct there that can't be quelched, which allows us to go to whatever means necessary to get done what we feel we have to do to survive. And so I think that there is there's a real sense where the morality of the Federation and the morality of humanity is truly pushed to the breaking point in certain points of Deep Space Nine. And we see some characters break, and we see some characters bend, and we see some characters be inflexible. You know, I think it's really interesting to see that aspect. And Sisko is one of the most interesting characters to explore that through, because he is at first quite inflexible when you think about the arc with the Maquis.
Yeah.
And yet he becomes quite bendable once the Dominion War starts happening, and the impact is, and this is the interesting thing. With the Maquis, it's such a small segment of the population that's being impacted, which then has larger ramifications for the geopolitical landscape of the entire Alpha Quadrant. But this has the entire Alpha Quadrant involved, with trillions, quadrillions of lives on the line. And therefore, you know, the choices become much different. And I think the nuance of that is just something that drives Deep Space Nine to a level that other Star Trek parts of the franchise just didn't reach that level, because they either weren't thinking about necessarily those questions, or that wasn't really the milieu in which they played in. But Deep Space Nine, that is absolutely where we're playing all the time.
Yeah.
So, you know, this whole aspect, I think, with these characters here with the Mirror Universe, it's what makes this, at this point, not a frivolous thing to be going to the Mirror Universe. It's not done haphazardly. I feel like the writers, when you think of it this way, have really put a lot of thought into us being in the Mirror Universe, and it makes, so far, each of these episodes a worthwhile endeavor to go on this journey over to the other side.
Well, that ties into another thought that I had, and a question I was going to ask you, which is, does the Mirror Universe in Deep Space Nine further the development of our characters in the Prime universe, and does it further the DS9 story, as opposed to just being, hey, wouldn't it be fun to go play around in the Mirror Universe?
Yeah, you know, I don't think this is a Beach Boys, wouldn't it be nice kind of situation. I do think that, especially with this episode here, this is really dealing with Jake and Ben and their longing for Jennifer. And the strange situation that they have been placed in, where she still exists in a place that they can go, and yet she's not quite the same, but she's kind of the same. And so it creates such a a frustrating, I think, mixture of feelings in both of them that they honestly don't know how to deal with it. And Jake has an easier time dealing with it because I think because he's younger, he can just intellectually let go of certain things and just enjoy the feeling of that quote unquote mom's back. Whereas Ben, on the other hand, it's quite a different thing when he knows that this woman is antithetical to his wife in so many ways. And yet, when he looks at her, every feeling that he ever had for Jennifer comes back. So I think, again, it just this episode, even specifically, it's not a waste to go and explore that, especially since, you know, we're in the fourth season and we started off the show with the death of Jennifer. So to explore this and where Ben and Jake are now, I think makes for a really interesting discussion. And it makes for, I think, a good episode for these two characters.
So let's talk more about Jake and Jennifer, because I'm listening to what you're saying about how Jake reacts to Jennifer's presence. And my first reaction to it was that I thought it was a little bit odd, because I was imagining if I were a teenager and my mother had died when I was young and I was actually there and I witnessed her death and I've been missing her for so many years, and then I come face to face essentially with her again, I feel like I would be overwhelmed with emotion. At this point, Jake is 17, as he was born 2355. This episode takes place in 2372. So then I started thinking, well, if I were 17 and it's been 9 years since my mother died, would I have come to terms with it to the point where I could intellectually separate the fact that this woman, even though I describe her as looking exactly like my mother, her hands are exactly like her, her reactions are the same. He goes on in this episode to talk about how she's just so much exactly his mother, but yet his reaction is very much like he knows this is a completely different person. I feel like that would be very difficult for me to do, but does it make sense to you that that's his reaction? That it's almost like it's just normal, I guess, in the 24th century to compartmentalize this and just know that, okay, there's a mirror universe and here's another woman and she's just exactly like my mother who I've been wanting to see for 9 years. No biggie.
Yeah, I don't think of it that way, because I this isn't a rational discussion, right? I don't think it has anything to do with intellectualism, or, you know, there's nothing intellectual about this. If someone that you love died and then a person was standing before you that looked exactly like them and literally was them, I mean, Jennifer from the Mirror Universe isn't just like Jennifer. She is Jennifer. She's just not the Jennifer from this universe. And therefore, what she says, you know, there is so much that is like their Jennifer and there is so much that isn't. And so I think the struggle of, you know, I think Jake understands, you know, this isn't my mother, but the emotion of it takes over. And I think that's where I see it is almost like there is a second chance. And then it's hard not to have all those feelings come back. Well, maybe it could be like it was, you know, and just the way that, you know, if you're a child of divorce and you see your parents getting along, you think, oh God, maybe they get back, you know, like it's the exact same kind of feeling. And so I think that's what Jake kind of has. It's just ramped up in the sense that, you know, Jennifer and Ben didn't get divorced. You know, she died, but now she's back to life, kind of, you know. But yeah, I can understand where Jake is coming from. And it didn't seem too odd to me that he would feel this way, because I was trying to put myself in his shoes, trying to put myself in the 24th century, you know, where this kind of stuff is slightly more normal than it is, you know, where we are. And I was
if somebody
literally looks like my mother and is my mother, just not from this universe, how would I feel? And I'm thinking I would probably feel somewhat like Jake, where it's like you can't help yourself because the subconscious part of who you are just takes over.
Yeah, the scene I'm thinking about in particular is when he walks into the quarters at the beginning and he sees them together, and it's just like, oh wow, hey, you're here, you know? My dad's told me so much about you, that kind of reaction. For me, that would be difficult.
Well, and I think part of that is that he's already known that she exists, you know? Right. So this would be one thing if he didn't know that. But the fact that him and Ben have talked about this and he has wanted to meet her, you know, and everything, I think that a lot of that has already been put aside so that you get to this reaction of, oh, you know, I knew you existed and I've always, you know, now he's at the point where, yes, I do want to meet you, you know, and so he's already set up for that. And so I think it makes for, if that hadn't happened, like if he didn't know, like Ben had never told him, then this reaction would feel totally false.
Yeah. Now, if we flip it around, what I also found interesting was how Jennifer reacted to Jake. So she went over there originally to kidnap him, to bring him over, just for the purpose of luring Benjamin over so that he could help them. But as the story goes on, you really see her motherly instinct surface. They did not have children in the mirror universe, but you can see how quickly she becomes attached to him and how that bond between the two of them forms, even though, as we've just been discussing, they're from different universes. They're not actually mother and son. But you can see how the circumstances for this Jennifer Sisko in the mirror universe had led her down a certain path, but how easily you can picture her going down the path of the Jennifer in our prime universe, being a mother and forming this relationship with Ben and then with Jake.
Yeah, I thought that was really poignant because for her, there is this whole side as well, just like Jake, where there is a sadness that this isn't the reality, you know.
Yeah, and that's, I think, a good way of putting it. Yeah.
The beauty of it too is that, you know, as she says to Ben, you know, you've done really well with him. He's a good, you're raising a good man.
Mm-hmm.
And so in a lot of ways, I think the beauty of what happens is that, you know, it would be like, say you see your future and you get to meet your future child and you see how they turn out and you're like, holy mother, they turn out amazing, you know. Mm-hmm. And Jennifer's getting that opportunity, and yet she will never actually get to have this child because her Ben Sisko is gone. And so it's just, there's this whole, like, I put myself in those shoes and I was like, that would be a big ouch. That would hurt.
Mm-hmm. The other thing that it does, which is different than how the mirror universe is portrayed, well, Enterprise is its own thing, but in Discovery, for example, here we don't get the idea that, well, our counterparts in the mirror universe are bad or evil. They don't have the same types of feelings that we have. Mm-hmm. This Jennifer has the same feelings and emotions and hopes and views of the world, I think, as the Jennifer in our universe. It just hasn't been allowed to surface because of circumstances. But it isn't like she's this crazy mad scientist in the mirror universe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they haven't like flipped the character over. It, just as we were talking about Smiley, we see him in the first couple of episodes and we feel like he is O'Brien.
Right.
He's pushed to other circumstances and to take other actions in this story. But that's just another interesting thing that DS9 does with the characters. Again, it isn't like, let's just flip everything.
Yeah.
It's much more nuanced.
I think there's much more nuance to the mirror universe and to the character. So it isn't just, oh, they're the evil version. They're the characters where life is taking a different path, but it doesn't necessarily make them evil. It makes them different. And I think that's one of the things they do really well. And obviously, yeah, you know, some of the characters is downright evil, you know, like the intendant or those kind of characters.
Sure. On that side of it,
You know, but there are other characters where it is much more of a nuance. Or I even think about, you know, the Dr. Bashir character. Julian is a angry, bitter man because of all the experiences that have to him, and he can't overcome that. You know, he doesn't seem to be able to overcome that in this universe. You know, so But yeah,
but I don't see him as an evil counterpart.
No, no, not evil. It's just he's different and he's angry. And instead of being, you know, the person which we knew who was very naive and everything, he's become bitter and frustrated and all that stuff. And I think it makes it's just, again, they have done such a better job of creating a universe that's it's truly the mirror universe where it's not just, oh, it's the evil versions of everybody, because that's very boring. And I think they realized that and they stopped doing that, you know, very quickly.
Yeah. Well, Nog says something in this episode that I think clarifies this a lot, where he says, I don't care about a parallel universe. I think parallel universe is a better way to describe all of this than a mirror universe, because when you use the word mirror, then you do feel like, well, we're just going to flip everybody. So if you're good here, you're bad there. That's sort of what we got in Mirror Mirror. Mm-hmm. But here, it's just another universe where everyone exists, but the story is playing out differently.
Yeah.
The Benjamin Jennifer element, of course, continues in this story. And we get to see him continue to come face to face with the ghost of his wife.
Mm-hmm.
Tying into that, I'd like to talk a little bit about Ben, Jake, and Jennifer together and family, because what struck me, again, I've watched this episode many, many times, but as I was watching it to prepare for this, I really started thinking about the fact that what this episode does is it gives us a glimpse of what it might have been like if the writers had decided to put the Siskos on the station as a family. And what would it be like? Because we come from Picard in The Next Generation, who was not married, who didn't have children. He was very much the loner as captain. What if you went the other extreme and then you have the head of the station, a commander at the beginning, who has his family there. He has his wife there. He has this young son there. And we have to see how he does his job in difficult circumstances with his family on board the station. So given they went the other route where we lose Jennifer and Benjamin is a single dad on the station and Jake has lost his mother, how important is that to the DS9 story and the character arcs for both of them?
I mean, I think it's hugely important. And I think the story of talking about a single father, one who dedicates his life to his son and to the cause to which he believes in, I think is truly important, you know, whether it's a single father or a single mother. And here, I think the importance of that was the fact that it was an African-American father who was single and all that meant. And the reason I say that is if you talk to Avery Brooks, he will specifically point that out as being something that was huge for him. This is why he took the role, really, because of this aspect. And so I think them going that distance to show what it was like to be a father and in Starfleet and all of these things was really well done. And I also think it's important, too, because, you know, for Sisko, I don't think his children are important when you have them, but they can't be your everything in the sense that, like, they take over every single part of your life. And I think Ben is able to show his son the importance of that. There are different things in the world and then the universe to which we have to be responsible for. And Ben does a great job of raising his son in that way. And I think this is something that it is kind of the cornerstone for these two characters. And I think it's the cornerstone for Sisko, Ben Sisko, because it makes him who he is as a character. Mm-hmm. It makes him defensive in some areas, you know, which other characters wouldn't be. And so I don't know. I really appreciate the way in which they have really, they never lost sight of that. And I think this is one of those episodes where you see the what if almost.
Yeah.
You know, a slight version of the what if. So.
Yeah. Yeah. The story would have been very different. The show would have been very different, certainly. For one thing, I mean, the father-son dynamic is really important. And like you said, Avery Brooks has said that that was a big draw for him in taking the role. And also, I think for Sirach Lofton as well, you know, that bond that the two actors formed really was like a father-son bond throughout the show. If Jennifer had not died, if that had not been the setup for the show, and if the Siskos had been a family on the station, I think the entire character arc for Sisko could have never happened, because it is mm-hmm. that sense of loss that drives his character from the very beginning. I don't think he would have been receptive to the idea that he was the emissary.
Right.
If he had not lost Jennifer, because that loss and that search for identity that had settled in for him by the time he got to the station, I think made him receptive to the idea that he was a religious figure to the Bajorans. And when you look at how the story ended as well, there's this... I don't know if this is true. Tell me what you think. Do you think that there was a sense of a search for purpose for Benjamin throughout the story? Like, he knew what his identity was until Jennifer died. And then, of course, he knew that it was up to him to raise Jake. But an overall sense of purpose is something that he was searching for, which he found by being the Bajoran emissary. And that drives him to the very end, and the fact that he was willing to sacrifice himself at the end of the series.
I'd never really thought of the idea that it's Jennifer's death that makes him receptive to that. But I do think that you're on to something, because I don't know if Jennifer had never died, if he would have ever been in Deep Space Nine in the first place. Because I doubt his life would have been one that would have gone towards, you know, being at the Utopia Polynesia yards where he helps create the Defiant for all those years, you know, as Ben's growing up and everything. So, you know, I think there's a real sense of change in his life, you know, direction in his life. And so I can sense the idea that he could be open to this idea because maybe he's looking for that something more. And yeah, I mean, in a lot of ways, I think that this, you know, it seems to reference the kind of the idea, the spiritual significance that people get. You know, when something really bad happens for them, they do search for answers in a way that they wouldn't have beforehand. And it's the beauty of when tragedy strikes, how it can actually turn out for good, even though we didn't expect it, right? And I think, I can definitely see that happening. So,
Okay. These are the thoughts that come to us as we're having our discussions.
Yeah.
You know, this is not even a point on our outline. This is, you know, just as we talk, these ideas pop into our heads. And that might be something to revisit in a future episode. But yeah, I was just imagining what it would have been like if the family had been there on the station, because we never really have any reason to think about that until this episode, where the three of them do spend so much time together.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I really enjoy the complexity to, you know, just the Ben and Jennifer relationship, and that he's struggling with, was there anything ever really there between them? Was there really a connection? But I think by the end of the episode, when he's holding his son as she's dead again, you know, I think you see that there was something, you know, that he could not deny. And I really think that that makes for, it speaks to the what we talked about with Jake and his reaction and everything. There's such an emotional aspect to what is happening that can't be comprehended, you know, in the non-24th century, where this thing is more normal. But I think they do a really good job of that. And one of the things that I think makes this such a strong episode is that we are getting to the core of the emotional core of these Deep Space Nine characters in a way that we almost never did in TNG. You know, there's very few episodes where we're really at the emotional core of a character, except for maybe, you know,
there are a few.
When Picard's sitting in a chair and screaming, you know, there are four lights, or he has his inner light experience. There are some that really get to those points, but this is just, I mean, you could consider this like a kind of a throwaway episode, and yet what we get is just some really deep understandings of where these characters are even 9 years after their wife and their mother's death. So,
yeah, that's a good point, that you could consider this like a throwaway episode, because when you think about the deeper stories on DS9, I don't think the Mirror Universe stories are ones people think about. they're just like, oh yeah, those are the Mirror Universe stories. You might even hear fans who say, yeah, I always skip the Mirror Universe stories. Just like you hear fans who say, I always skip all the Ferengi stories. But there's so much in each episode that ties into the greater story. I think you have to take them all in.
Well, and it's what makes it, I mean, they're not allowing you to do that. So if you are skipping Ferengi stories, you're going to miss B plots that are going to have to do with other characters. You know, if you're skipping something like this, you're going to miss this episode that really has to do with where Jake and Ben are emotionally since you met them, in Emissary. So
exactly. Okay, well, let's talk about a few more characters here before we wrap up. Let's talk about the Intendant. This is an interesting story for her because now she is, because Worf was introduced to the show, now we have someone above her. We have the Regent. We also see that she has lost the station and she's trying to save herself. I was thinking about how early in the episode she saves Sisko, but then at the end she's willing to kill his son and she kills Nog. Nog helps her escape. And then, just on the off chance that he might say something to someone, she just kills him. So she's just completely in it for herself.
Yeah, that's what I absolutely loved about the Intendant, is that she's just a despicable character, and there's no redemption for her. But that's good. You know, as we talked about earlier, there is a sense of nuance to these characters, but some of them are kind of the classic, and that's where they understand they need to do that. You know, I think that's great that they mix it up so that there are some of those that are just like, oh man, these are so awful, but there's a deliciousness to their awfulness, which is what makes it fun to be in the Mirror Universe. And what's great is that this is an emotional episode for Jake and Ben, right? But they don't miss the joy of kind of being over here. And I think they balance those things really well in this episode. And I think that's a smart, again, it's just a smart aspect to their writing where they're not missing where they are, but they're not also, they're not taking it so far that it doesn't make any sense. Or so far that it becomes a character, and we're definitely not in a character at this moment.
What did you think about Worf as the Regent? I mean, all he really gets to do in this one is sit in that chair, although he does get to echo Picard when he says, make it so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I kind of just love him in this. You know, he's so ridiculous in it. And what makes it so awesome is he's so un-Worfish.
Yeah.
You know, he has no honor. Right. You know, so they do a good job of making him kind of like the character of Klingons. And I love it. You know, he becomes actually, what's funny is he actually kind of becomes more of a Gowron type character, a character who wants to seem powerful and all that, but really isn't. Mm-hmm. You know, they just put up a great front. So.
And he has his little pet here. It kind of reminded me of Jabba the Hutt, you know, who has people on chains next to him as he sits on his throne. And
this time it's Garak, though.
It's so. Garak, yeah.
But no metal bikini, so.
Thank goodness. Can you imagine if Garak had been there in a metal bikini throughout the episode?
It just would have been perfect, personally. Like, it would have been, like, classic. That, I mean, I'm surprised that Discovery hasn't done that yet.
It would have brought all new meaning to the classic Garak episode, The Wire.
Yeah, the underwire in that, you know, just ask Carrie Fisher, you know, you can look up videos of her and talking about that. Yeah, so it was apparently not very comfortable, so.
But did you see any difference in Garak's character here from the Garak that we've seen in the Mirror Universe earlier, or even the Garak in our own universe?
You know, I didn't see much difference. He seems pretty much the same. You know, he is also a character who is much like the, basically he's the male version of the Intendant, less sexy.
Yeah,
you know,
sexy.
He really, I mean, he is. And I'm sure Andrew Robinson would say the same thing. But, you know, it's, you're just getting somebody who's out for themselves and themselves only. And so, Yeah, I don't think there's not a lot of nuance to this character, and that's fine. You don't need there to be, right? You really don't.
But I feel like he's still always scheming. Like, even as he's talking to the regent, he can't go anywhere. He's got this shackle around his neck. He's on a chain, but he still reminds me of our usual Garrick in that there's always something going on in his head and he's always scheming.
Mm-hmm.
That's the feeling
and
that I get.
That's the thing. That's where I feel like he is that intended character in male form. He is very much like her in that he's just out to survive. That's really all he cares about. And he wants to have some monochrome of power, right? So those are the two things that kind of matter most to him. And he's doing every single thing possible to be able to get those. That's really all that matters. So, And I like him as a character. Again, I like that we get this kind of like weasel. You know, it's kind of fun. And when he's like, that's kneel before the regent, and he's like, I would rather do nothing else. You know, it's like,
exactly.
It's amazing. It's just, and it's funny. So again, you're adding some humor to some other parts of this episode, which are very, you know, they're more emotionally driven and stuff. So I think that's great.
Well, does anything else stand out to you from this episode? Do you have any thoughts on Nog? Did he seem completely different? Did he seem like there are moments where he might be the same Nog that we know?
You know, I felt like the Nog that we get here is basically like Quark without any of his redeeming qualities.
Okay.
You know, so that was kind of interesting. Is he really does feel like a Quark from our universe, but with none of the softening. You know, like the kind of classic Ferengi who really is out for nothing but profit and Umox. So, you know, and I kind of, again, I think that's, again, that's smart because you are flipping it on its head and having fun with that. And then, of course, you know, he gets killed. And then that's another part about the Mirror Universe that I love is that they will just absentmindedly kill anyone because it doesn't matter, but it also shows the consequences, and that's kind of neat to get to be able to play with those type of consequences in this universe the way you don't get to in the Prime universe. So
yeah,
that's enjoyable.
When I look at him, I can imagine the Nog that we see at the beginning of Deep Space Nine, and then if I think back before Emissary, what Nog may have been like. And if you remove the influence of Jake, because in this episode, when Jake is sitting up there over the promenade, Nog can't believe that in the other universe, it would be the two of them sitting up there together. And when you think about the influence that Jake's friendship has on Nog, as well as the other Starfleet officers who are around, and even people like Kira, who's not a Starfleet officer, and how that changes Nog and it pushes him towards Starfleet and it just turns him into a better person. If you remove all of that, which is what's happened in this universe, you get this Nog.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really great observation because, you know, the reason that Nog is different is specifically because of the friendship he has with Jake. And that's they both have had an influence on each other. And I think that was kind of nice to be reminded of that influence there at the beginning of the episode and how much, you know, he was missing Nog. And so to kind of run into him.
That was a good setup for the story,
yeah,
right? To have that be the
very
first thing
effective.
That we see. Yeah.
So
because it's not the main point at all.
Exactly.
Of the rest of the story, but when the moment comes, you do feel the tie.
Yes, and it I think it's really well done. So, you know, it's part of the writers just doing a good job of creating something. You know, they in the end, actually, they kind of set off Chekhov's Nog. You know, like that they were going to play with that idea later on. So, yeah, Gosh, this episode has some really good writing, I think, that we've pulled out that most people might miss because they're just, it's a Mirror Universe episode. Doesn't really...
Yeah, because you're just focused on the Mirror Universe element, right?
Yeah.
I guess the last thing I would point out about the episode is just watching the battle scenes at the end. Going back to the beginning of today's episode and what you were saying really makes me wish they would remaster DS9 because I would love to see those battles in high definition.
I... I mean, I 100% agree. So the show is rife for it too, because the extra dimension would really help in a lot of those sets as well. You know, when they were up on top of the, there, you know, they added that second level, the promenade.
Yeah.
And there's so much happening and everything. I just think that would all come out in a way that,
Something that, I mean, I don't know that they could even capture this in remastering, but if you imagine if this show could have been shot in 4K as the show would be today, that depth, that dimension that you're talking about would be so present. Watching that on a large 4K television, it would be such an immersive environment.
Yeah, it also makes me wish this show had been able to have been done in widescreen, just because you know, the confining nature of the 4x3 definitely. Yeah. What's funny is that it feels more confining here than any other Star Trek show. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't feel that on any of the other shows from the 90s or before, because everything felt right. But this one, everything looks like it. You should. It's kind of like when you watched as a kid, if you got the VHS versions of Star Wars and you'd only seen the 4x3 version. And then you saw that when they put it in widescreen, you're like, oh my gosh, there's so much more happening. That's you're exactly like,
what
you feel
like. There's that toy I have that I've never seen before in the movie. It's over there on the side.
Exactly. Hey, there's that Andorian they keep talking about on Deep Space Nine. You know, so
Exactly. All right. Well, this has been a good discussion, but it's not the only thing we've been talking about here on the network recently. So here's a quick look at some other things you may have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, The Edge, a Star Trek Discovery podcast.
It's a white uniform, and you're dealing with medical blood, all this other stuff, fluids.
Yeah.
That thing ain't gonna stay white. So in my head, they're treated that it just doesn't even stick. It just repels off it.
Earl Grey.
So Picard says he won't transfer anyone off the ship, but as a compromise, get ready for this. As a compromise, he will reassign Worf as Wesley's tutor.
I love that. Yes! Put some discipline in that boy.
Oh my gosh, that's so funny.
This is like a choice you could, I don't know. I would imagine.
Man, I really like this story.
You like
now.
It?
Yeah.
You know, there's more later, but yeah, Worf is Wesley's tutor.
Melodic Trex.
And, you know, I talked to the producers when I first did the show, and the first thing they had me do was take a combination of the dun da 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 da, you know, Sandy Courage, wonderful horn theme. And, Jerry's da 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 da, you know, his theme for the first movie, and make a theme out of those and combine them. So I did it electronically, and they said, good enough. And I said, look, this is not my specialty. And they said, never mind, you got it. So 18 years later, you know, that was it.
The 602 Club.
I did definitely feel what you're saying, Matt, like it was a Bond greatest hits in that opening sequence. You've got Russians again, well, or supposed to be in Russia. You've got, you know, a group of terrorists all gathering together about, you know, all these different weapons, and you're trying to ID people. And then, you know, we, of course, bring back in M, and then she's having to argue now with the government and the military. And then, you know, I like that they kind of bring in Bond in a subtle way, calling him White Knight this time. That was cool. But yeah, I think otherwise it feels very familiar. But in a great way, I feel like Arnold dealing with the music, and then the actors as well taking good direction made a lot of intensity in that scene. So you don't feel like you're moving into the film slowly. They're coming at you full force, and then, you know, Bond runs off with the plane. So I really liked it.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of these shows and find out what we're talking about in your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond, of course, on Matthew's 602 Club. You can hear about all kinds of things that are outside of the world of Star Trek. You'll find all of our shows everywhere you get your podcasts. We're pretty much everywhere, just like Jeffrey Combs. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button in Apple Podcasts on your iPhone or your iPad or your Apple TV or even the desktop iTunes app to get the latest episode as soon as it drops. And as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, if you have time, we'd love to get a star rating and a written review from you. If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows in Google Play Music, on Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, Windows Phone, Spotify, iHeartRadio, pretty much anywhere you can find podcasts and audio programs, you'll find us there. You can also stream from the website and download the MP3. And you can also get the RSS link if you want to pop that into some other type of reader. Now, if you'd like to contact us, we'd love to hear your thoughts on the show. There are many ways that you can reach us. The best way to take part in a broader discussion is probably in the Babel Conference. That's our listeners group on Facebook. Just type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field, and it should come up. If it doesn't, just type the entire name, the Babel Conference. That is a closed group, so if you're new to the show or new to the Babel Conference, you'll need to click join and answer two simple questions, and then a moderator can let you into the group. If you'd like to send us email, you can use the form on our website at trek.fm/contact. Just choose to send to a show and choose the orb, and that email will come to both Matthew and me. And you can also find the network on Twitter. At TrekFM is our username. And we also have our main Facebook page on facebook.com/TrekFM. All right, Matthew, when you're not busy writing new hilarious quips for Garrick to say to the regent as he sits there chained by his side, where can people find you?
Well, I can't spend too long, Chris. I got to keep busy or else Garrick will kill me. So when I'm not writing these quips, which you could find on Twitter at MattRushing02, you can also find me on Instagram under the same name. You can also find me here on the network, as you mentioned, on the 602 Club, Chris, talking about all things geeky that aren't Star Trek related, because there are so many other franchises we love. So make sure you check that out, because a lot of franchise love going out there for other things like, you know, Star Wars and stuff like that. You can also find me over on the Nerd Party Network doing a couple of shows, Owl Post with Dre Kaufman, talking all about Harry Potter one chapter at a time as we walk through the series. You can find me on Aggressive Negotiations with John Mills as we talk all about Star Wars each week. Just crazy different topic each week with two guys just sitting down talking about the franchise we love. And then last but not least, doing cinema stories with my friend Courtney as we talk about films through the lens of faith. But Chris, when you're not busy getting caught between the moon and New York City, I mean the Mirror Universe, where can people find you?
Well, you can find me on Twitter as well. My username is C. Brian Jones, letter C, and Brian with a Y. That's my name pretty much everywhere in social media. And you can find me elsewhere on the network doing the Ready Room, which I do from time to time as my health and work allows. Larry Nemechek and I just did an episode a couple of weeks ago where we talk about the Alex Kurtzman deal with CBS, the 5-year deal, which may bring us all kinds of new Star Trek content. And we talk about the future of the franchise. So check that out if you're interested. You can also find my writing on the official website at StarTrek.com. And as for other podcasts, I do Notes from the Edge, which I'm not doing right now because Discovery is on hiatus. But when Discovery is airing new episodes, you can check out that show where I explore connections between Discovery and the broader Star Trek universe. So if you missed it the first time around and you're doing a Discovery rewatch, be sure to go back after you watch each episode of Discovery and catch the corresponding episode of Notes from the Edge. Matthew, before we go, I'd also like to thank our associate producers here on The Orb, Norman C. Lowell, William Murray, Kay Elizabeth Shaw, and James Muldrow. Thank you so much, guys, for your support of The Orb and all of the shows on the network. It's thanks to you that we're able to keep things coming. And if you would like to support the network, you can do that too. Just check out patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm to get all the details. We have perks such as early access to episodes, exclusive content, associate producer credits, and more. And that's all available there through the website at patreon.com/trekfm. It really takes quite a lot of money to produce the shows and especially to host and distribute the shows. And we're just like barely getting by right now, so we could definitely use more support. So if you enjoy our podcasts and you want to help keep Star Trek discussion alive, go check that out. We really appreciate your support there. And of course, we thank our associate producers so much. Well, Matthew, it was great discussing the third part of the Mirror Universe on DS9. And everyone, tune in for our next show, where we'll talk about part four, which is Resurrection. And of course, Matthew, that's where our favorite dirty Vedic Baral comes through to our universe. I think he's even dirtier in the Mirror Universe.
Chris, I've no doubt. But we want to say thank you so much for joining us, and we'll see you next time as we gaze into the orb.